This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. Let's take a quick look at the markets.
Yes, let me regale all of you with a tale of markets of green, actually. Yesterday, we were looking at Asian markets that closed in the green, although European markets were marginally in the red. So just a quick run through of Asian markets. The KLCI was up 0.4% at the close. The Straits Times Index was up 0.6%. The Nikkei 225 up 0.5%. The Korea Kospi was up 0.8%. Only the Australia ASX 200 was marginally in the red, down 0.02%. So you can basically call that flat. All the major European indices were also slightly in the red, but flat. And if we take a look at the US stock markets, they all closed in the red a few hours ago. The S&P 500 was down 0.4%, Dow Jones down 0.3%, and the NASDAQ composite also down around 0.4%.
So for some insight into what is moving markets, we're speaking this morning to Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Awanda. Jeff, always good to have you. Good morning. So US equities took a bit of a dip last night while bond yields rallied after inflation unexpectedly rose 2.9% in June. Will this force the hand of the Fed to act and possibly tighten their monetary policy?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Look, inflation hit the highest level since 1991 last night, and it's mainly driven by used car prices. When you strip those prices out, actually the number doesn't look nearly as bad, and those used car price rises should be transitory. And I think that's the argument that Jerome Powell will make in Congress at his two-day testimony today. So we've seen a modest reaction, a modest sort of inflationary reaction, but it's not really a panic one. So I think the jury's still out. I think that case will be much harder to make if we're still at these levels come the September FOMC meeting.
Well, the earnings season in the US and so far two big banks, JP and Goldman, have reported stellar numbers, but the markets remain unimpressed with both stocks down overnight. Why?
Well, JP Morgan itself said it would be hard to maintain those results going forward if interest rates stayed at low levels. Basically, when the yield curve is steeper, banks make more money because they lend at higher rates and they borrow at lower rates. It becomes simple math. So given also that the IPO landscape has changed remarkably in the last week with China pretty much kiboshing Chinese companies listing in the US, the earnings outlook isn't quite as strong going forward. I think what we're going to need to see is interest rates or the yield curve steepen to keep those results going for the big US banks. And I think that's why their stocks got marked down last night.
Following up on that, Jeff, it looks like in this kind of developments we're seeing between the U.S. listed Chinese listed companies in the U.S., Lalamove looks to be wanting to shift its IPO over from the U.S. to Hong Kong. Do you see more of this happening going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't see in the present environment how Chinese companies are going to be listing in the U.S. I think the political risk is now so high after the DD one last week and the ongoing clampdown in Tencent, et cetera, that it's just going to make it too difficult. They also use some quite opaque structures by the Cayman Islands and these other tax havens to actually enact the listing as well. And I think there'll be more attention on that. I think that the Chinese government is hinting more than subtly that they don't want those listings in the US and they want them in Hong Kong, which was what Hong Kong's purpose is as far as the Chinese government goes. So I think it's going to be great for Hong Kong because they're going to get a lot more IPOs. But I think that's another reason why bank stocks in the US didn't really perform last night as well. I think that channel of revenue for the US stock markets is going to close up.
The PBOC did decide to cut its reserve rates last week, and this is despite some positive trade data indicating that recovery in the mainland remains robust. Perhaps you could give us some insight into this, Jeff. Why are they doing this? Are they foreshadowing a possible downturn in the near future?
Yeah, this one's a little tricky, actually, because you can look at this two ways. There a lot of medium-term financing facilities to the banking sector are maturing soon. And one argument is that they're dropping the RRR ratio in anticipation of those funding terms rolling off to keep bank liquidity up. But they hardly ever, or they never ever cut that RRR rate during a positive economic time. They usually only do it during times of economic stress to stimulate the economy. And the fact that they're doing it now suggests to me that they think that the increase that we're seeing in the numbers in China is going to run out of steam, and they're trying to get ahead of the game here. We haven't seen Chinese companies passing on those huge jumps in PPI prices to end users price-wise. So they're not exporting inflation to the rest of the world either at the moment. And that says to me that I think that they're getting concerned along with sort of static domestic demand, that the economy may slow down as this post-COVID-19 economic dividend runs its course. So I think they're more concerned about growth in the future, particularly when you look around the rest of Asia. We're all having massive issues with COVID-19, and we're going to have to downgrade growth around Asia as well. So, yeah, I think this is trying to get ahead of the game at the moment.
Indonesia is reporting record high increases in COVID-19 cases, and it might take over India as Asia's epicenter for COVID. What concerns you most about the situation on ground?
Yeah, well, having spent last week with COVID-19 myself, as you can hear from my voice, I've still got a few background effects going on from it. It's a very, very serious problem here. It really is. And in Jakarta in particular, with this Delta variant, much like Malaysia and so much of the rest of Asia, it's really been caught out with this. And I think this is going to have an inevitable impact on growth in Asia going forward. And we're going to have to sort of mollify some of our economic recovery outlooks until they get on top of it. I think things are going to get worse here before they get better. It was just shy of 50,000 cases in Indonesia yesterday, and that's with their sort of low levels of testing. And I think we've got more tough times ahead. And we've even seen Bank of Indonesia already downgrade their GDP outlook for the rest of the year. So I think things are probably going to get worse here before they get better.
Jeff, wishing you a speedy recovery. But following up on this point here, like you mentioned, the Malaysia situation is also a little bit concerning. Virus cases may remain high, and foreign investors increasingly seem more nervous about our economic prospects. How do you see the short-term trend for investment inflows and our ringgit right now? I think it's right now around 4.19.
Yeah, I think it's quite telling when you look around ASEAN in particular, who are all in this sort of COVID-19 rabbit hole at the moment. Even as the dollar weakened last week, the ringgit, the Thai baht, Singapore dollar, Indonesian rupiah, Philippine peso, Korean won, etc., all remained quite weak. So they all remained at the top of their ranges against the US dollar, or the US dollar remained at the top of the ranges against them, I should say more accurately. Given that we're not really seeing any sign of improvement in this COVID-19 outlook, either in Malaysia or Indonesia or the Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, etc., I think those currencies are going to stay weak. And I'm looking for the ringgit to move upwards towards 4.3 versus the dollar over the next 7 days. That is going to be complicated now by that very, very high CPI number, which has firmed up bond rates and made the dollar stronger over in the US as well. So I think Asia is going to be under pressure this week on a number of fronts. So I'm expecting more ringgit weakness going forward.
And what about gold, Jeff? Because gold prices remain locked into a pretty tight channel, how might inflationary pressures, especially in the US, play in moving it out of its current range?
Yeah, at the moment, it seems to be more like a direct dollar play. The actual correlation for inflation and gold has been a bit marginal at the moment. Having said that, gold did actually manage to trace slightly higher overnight, but still remains locked in a range. I think overall, gold still looks positive. It has had quite a substantial pullback, but that recovery is holding above $1,800 now. and it's worn the pressure of a stronger US dollar overnight. So I think gold remains on a buy on dips down to 1,790, and we're going to see it grind higher now to 1,850, because quite clearly the US inflation outlook is not looking as transitory as the Fed would have us believe.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and a speedy recovery to you. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda, giving us some insight into what is moving markets today. But you know, speaking of gold, Goldman and JP Morgan reported...
I give you a one finger clap. See, no one can hear it.
It's as gold as it gets, like with investment banking.
Yeah, well, they reported, you know, puns aside, but they reported better than expected earnings for the second quarter, thanks to their investment banking arms and M&A activities. Now, JP Morgan's investment bankers posted their best quarter ever, driven mainly by record deal making in the first half of this year, so bolstering their bottom line.
Yeah, fees from advising and mergers on mergers and underwriting stocks and bonds soared 25% second quarter. We did see, I can't remember the exact number, but we saw IPO skyrocket last year as well. This all plays into their fees. Overall net income came in at $11.9 billion. But as we were speaking to Jeff earlier, it's the outlook that matters, right? Because that's how you price the value of a stock. And essentially, the shareholders weren't too pleased with the fact that JP Morgan and Goldman basically saying, we are not sure whether we can sustain this kind of activity, right? Especially, I guess, I wonder how the headwinds here from, or tailwinds, I can't remember what it is, but basically how the friction from deal-making moving away from the, potentially moving away from the US if IPOs, Chinese companies start listing more in Hong Kong as opposed to the US, those could have some implications. But we are seeing Wall Street enter China quite heavily as well. I think Amundi recently said they're going to increase their assets under management in China. They're going to try and double it to $240 billion in the next 5 years or something like that. So there's more focus there. So that'll be quite interesting.
Yeah, same with Goldman Sachs. Their second quarter was helped by M&A activities. Their investment banking group posting a 36% revenue increase, and this helped counter the big drop-off in trading activity that they saw last year. And the net income totaled $5.5 billion, the second highest firm-wide quarterly results. But it's very interesting. I think after COVID-19, we may see more private equity firms letting go of some of the deals, unlocking the value from their deals, and starting to list some of their investments on the market. And we can see that in Malaysia, like Creador, for example, has been offloading some of their assets now to monetize what they've invested.
Yeah, interesting in terms of for the banking players in the US, this quarter's been quite a reversal for them from a year ago, because at that time, if you remember, traders were reaping massive windfalls on the market swings that we were seeing. And the economic outlook then was somewhat pretty murky. Now, though, the economic outlook is starting to look a little bit better, and yet they haven't been doing as well as has been expected. Now,
or at least the outlook, right? It's the expectations of this. It's again, the struggle is going to be maintaining this kind of activity. And with people going back to work in the US, so not trading on the stock markets, not, and the kind of deals, I guess they're just worried about whether last year was just a very, very hot market because of all the liquidity and the valuations, whether you're going to see that start to lessen, especially as we start talking more about tapering and all these other things, especially because the US economy is recovering.
Well, if the tapering starts, then we might start to see major sell-offs, and that's when activity will be boosted again.
Yeah, but consumption and things like that could be good for the more retail banks like the Bank of America. So that will be interesting to pay attention to their earnings when it comes out, as well as their outlook.
Well, this is the very beginning of earnings season over in the US. Definitely will be more to come. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.